Chapter 18. Healing. Lamps on iron wall brackets lit the passages deep beneath the tower where Shiriam took them. The few doors they passed were shut tight, some locked, some so cunningly worked that they remained unseen until Egwene was right on top of them. Dark openings marked most of the crossing hallways, while down others she could only see the dim glow of distant lights spaced far apart. She saw no other people. These were not places even Aes Sedai often came. The air was neither cool nor warm, but she shivered anyway, and at the same time felt sweat trickling down her back. It was down here, in the depths of the White Tower, that novices went through their last test before being raised to accepted, or put out of the tower if they failed. Down here, accepted took the three oaths after passing their final test. No one, she realized, had ever told her what happened to an accepted who failed. Down here, somewhere, was the room where the tower's few Angreal and Sa'angreal were kept, and the places where the Tur-Angreal were stored. The Black Aja had struck at those storerooms, and if some of the Black Aja were lying in wait in one of those dark side corridors, if Shiriam were leading them not to Mat, but to— She gave a squeak when the Aes Sedai stopped suddenly, then colored when the others looked at her curiously. "I was thinking about the Black Aja," she said weakly. "Do not think of it," Shiriam said. And for once she sounded like the Shiriam of old, kindly if firm. "The Black Aja will not be your worry for years to come. You have what the rest of us do not. Time before you must deal with it. Much time yet. When we enter, stay against the wall and keep silent. You are allowed here as a benevolence, to attend, not to distract or interfere." She opened a door covered in gray metal worked to look like stone. The square room within was spacious, its pale stone walls bare. The only furnishing was a long stone table draped with a white cloth in the middle of the room. Mat lay on that table, fully clothed save for coat and boots, eyes closed and face so gaunt that Egwene wanted to cry. His labored breathing made a hoarse whistle. The Shadar Logoth dagger hung sheathed at his belt, the ruby capping its hilt seeming to gather light, so it glowed like some fierce red eye, despite the illumination of a dozen lamps, magnified by the pale walls and white-tiled floor. The Ammerlin seat stood at Matt's head, and Lyanna at his feet. Four Aes Sedai stood down one side of the table and three down the other. Shiriam joined the three. One of them was Varen. Egwene recognized Seraphel, another brown sister, and Alana Mosvani of the green Aja and Anaya of the blue, which was Moiraine's Aja. Alana and Anaya had each taught her some of her lessons in opening herself to the true source, in how to surrender to Saidar in order to control it. And between her first arrival in the White Tower and her departure, Anaya must have tested her 50 times to see if she was a dreamer. The tests had shown nothing one way or the other, but plain-faced, kindly Anaya, with that warm smile that was her only beauty, had kept calling her back for more tests, as implacable as a boulder rolling downhill. The rest were unknown to her, except for one cool-eyed woman she thought was a white. The Ammerlin and the Keeper wore their stoles, of course, but none of the others had anything to mark them out except great serpent rings and ageless Aes Sedai faces. None of them acknowledged the presence of Egwene and the other two by so much as a glance. Despite the outward calm of the women around the table, Egwene thought she saw signs of uncertainty, a tightness to Anaya's mouth, a slight frown on Alana's darkly beautiful face. The cool-eyed woman kept smoothing her pale blue dress over her thighs without seeming to realize what she was doing. An Aes Sedai Egwene did not know set a plain, polished wooden box, long and narrow, on the table and opened it. From its nest in the red silk lining, the Ammerlin took out a white fluted wand the length of her forearm. It could have been bone or ivory, but was neither. No one alive knew what it was made of. Egwene had never seen the wand before, but she recognized it from a lecture Anaya had given the novices, one of the few Sa'angreal and perhaps the most powerful that the tower possessed. Sa'angreal had no power of their own, of course. They were merely devices for focusing and magnifying what an Aes Sedai could channel. But with that wand, a strong Aes Sedai might be able to crumple the walls of Tar Valon. Egwene clutched Nynaeve's hand on one side and Elaine's on the other. Light! They're not sure they can heal him, even with a Sangreal. With that Sangreal, what chance would we have had? We'd probably have killed him and ourselves, too. Light.
I will meld the flows, the Amarlin said. Be careful. The power needed to break the bond with the dagger and heal its damage is very close to what could kill him. I will focus. Attend.
She held the wand straight out in front of her in both hands, above Matt's face. Still unconscious, he took his head and tightened a fist on the dagger's hilt, muttering something that sounded like a denial. A glow appeared around each eye's Sedai, that soft white light that only a woman who could channel could see. Slowly the light spread until that which seemed to emanate from one woman touched that which came from the woman beside her, merged with it till there was only one light, a light that to Egwene's eyes diminished the lamps to nothing. And in that brightness was a stronger light still, a bar of bone-white fire, the Sangreal. Egwene fought the urge to open herself to Saidar and add her flow to the tide. It was a pull so strong she was about to be jerked off her feet. Elaine tightened her hold on her hand. Nynaeve took a step toward the table, then stopped with an angry shake of her head.
Light, Egwene thought. I could do it.
But she did not know what it was she could do.
Light, it's so strong. It's so wonderful.
Elaine's hand was trembling. On the table, Matt thrashed in the middle of the glow, jerking this way, then that, muttering incomprehensibly. But he did not loosen his hold on the dagger, and his eyes remained closed. Slowly, ever so slowly, he began to arch his back, muscles straining till he shook. Still he fought and bucked, until finally only his heels and his shoulders touched the table. His hand on the dagger sprang open, and quivering crept back from the hilt, was forced fighting from the hilt. His lips skinned away from his teeth in a snarl, a grimace of pain, and his breath came in forced grunts.
"They are killing him," Egwene whispered. "The Amarlin is killing him. We have to do something."
Just as softly, Nynaeve said, "If we stop them, if we could stop them, he'll die. I do not think I could handle half that much of the power." She paused as if she had just heard her own words. That she could channel half of what 10 full Aes Sedai did with a Sangreal, and her voice grew even fainter.
"Light, help me, I want to."
She fell silent abruptly. Did she mean that she wanted to help Matt, or that she wanted to channel that flow of power? Egwene could feel that urge in herself, like a song that compelled her to dance.
"We must trust them," Nynaeve said in an intense whisper finally. "He has no other chance."
Suddenly Matt shouted loud and strong,
"Muadrin tiadar alende kabadrin radiem."
Arched and struggling, eyes squeezed shut, he bellowed the words clearly.
"Los Valdar Quebiari, Los Karai an Caldazar, al Caldazar."
Egwene frowned. She had learned enough to recognize the old tongue, if not to understand more than a few words.
Karai an Caldazar, al Caldazar.
For the honor of the Red Eagle, for the Red Eagle. Ancient battle cries of Manetharan, a nation that had vanished during the Trolloc Wars, a nation that had stood where the Two Rivers was now. That much she knew, but in some way it seemed for a moment that she should understand the rest, too, as if the meaning were just out of sight and all she had to do was turn her head to know. With a loud pop of tearing leather, the golden sheath dagger rose from Matt's belt, hung a foot above his straining body. The ruby glittered, seemed to send off crimson sparks, as if it too fought the healing. Matt's eyes opened, and he glared at the women standing around him.
"Mia Allende, Aes Sedai, Kabalein Misainye, Inda Muagde, Aes Sedai, Misainye, Mia Allende!"
And he began to scream, a roar of rage that went on and on, till Egwene wondered that he had breath left in him. Hurriedly, Anaya bent to lift a dark metal box from under the table, moving as if it were heavy. When she set it beside Matt and opened the lid, only a small space was revealed within sides at least 2 inches thick. Anaya bent again for a set of tongs such as a good wife might use in her kitchen, and grasped the floating dagger in them as carefully as if it were a poisonous snake. Matt's scream grew frantic. The ruby shone furiously, flashing blood red. The Aes Sedai thrust the dagger into the box and snapped the lid down, letting out a loud sigh as it clicked shut. "A filthy thing," she said. As soon as the dagger was hidden, Matt's shriek cut off, and he collapsed as if muscle and bone had turned to water. An instant later, the glow surrounding Aes Sedai and table winked out.
"Done,"
the Armorlin said hoarsely, as if she had been the one screaming.
"It is done."
Some of the Aes Sedai sagged visibly, and sweat beaded on more than one brow. Anaya pulled a plain linen handkerchief from her sleeve and wiped her face openly. The cool-eyed white dabbed almost surreptitiously at her cheeks with a bit of Lugard lace.
"Fascinating," Varen said, "that the old blood could flow so strongly in anyone today."
She and Seraphel put their heads together, talking softly but with many gestures.
"Is he healed?" Nynaeve said. "Will he live?"
Matt lay as if sleeping, but his face still had that hollow-cheeked gauntness. Egwene had never heard of a healing that did not cure everything. Unless just separating him from the dagger took all of the power they used, light.
"Brandas," the Armorlin said, "will you see that he is taken back to his room?"
"As you command, mother,"
the cool-eyed woman said, her curtsy as emotionless as she herself seemed. When she left to summon bearers, several of the other Aes Sedai left too, including Anaya. Varen and Seraphel followed, still talking to one another too quietly for Egwene to make out what they said.
"Is Matt all right?" Nynaeve demanded.
Shiriam raised her eyebrows. The Armorlin's seat turned toward them.
"He is as well as he can be," she said coldly. "Only time will tell. Carrying something with Shadar Logoth's taint for so long, who knows what effect it will have on him? Perhaps none, perhaps much. We will see. But the bond with the dagger is broken. Now he needs rest and as much food as can be gotten into him. He should live."
"What was that he was shouting, mother?"
Elaine asked, then hastily added,
"If I may ask."
"He was ordering soldiers."
The Armorlin gave the young man lying on the table a quizzical look. He had not moved since collapsing, but Egwene thought his breathing seemed easier, the rise and fall of his chest more rhythmic.
"In a battle 2,000 years gone, I would say. The old blood comes again."
"It was not all about a battle," Nynaeve said. "I heard him say Aes Sedai. That was no battle. Mother," she added belatedly. For a moment the Armorlin seemed to consider, perhaps what to say, perhaps whether to say anything. "For a time," she said firmly, "I believe the past and the present were one. He was there and he was here and he knew who we were. He commanded us to release him." She paused again. "I am a free man, Aes Sedai. I am no Aes Sedai meat. That is what he said." Lyanna sniffed loudly, and some of the other Aes Sedai muttered angrily under their breath.
"But mother," Egwene said, "he could not have meant it as it sounds. Manetharan was allied with Tar Valon."
"Manetharan was an ally, child," the Armorlin told her. "But who can know the heart of a man? Not even he himself, I suspect. A man is the easiest animal to put on a leash, and the hardest to keep leashed, even when he chooses it himself."
"Mother," Shiriam said, "it is late. The cooks will be waiting for these helpers."
"Mother," Egwene asked anxiously, "could we not stay with Matt? If he may still die—" The Armorlin's look was level, her face without expression.
"You have chores to do, child." It was not scrubbing pots, she meant. Egwene was sure of that.
"Yes, mother."
She curtsied, her skirts brushing Nynaeve's and Elaine's as they made theirs. One last time she looked at Matt, then followed Shiriam out. Matt had still not moved.